It's funky night tonight. It's funky night tonight. Give us a candle, give us a light. It's funky night tonight.
Welcome to the Outbreak. Oh, goddammit. This happens when I try to read something.
Don't be nervous, Drake.
I'm not nervous. Let me just don some of this coke.
We should start it like that. That's awesome.
I could do that. Welcome to the October Games Podcast, the monthly podcast that gives you behind-the-scenes news and progress on our current projects. I'm Drake, the lead designer at October Games.
Hey, this is Roberto. I am the 3D artist.
And I'm Dan. I do sound.
Awesome. Well, how you guys been doing?
Good. Keeping warm. It's cold over here.
Yeah. Well,
it's cold.
Yeah, it's all right here. Shit.
No, it's good. I just want to give a quick disclaimer.
What's that?
For anybody listening, I might sound like a, what's the word, like a stoned, medicated person tonight, but I just finished playing 5 hours of Persona 3, so it kind of kills you a bit, but somehow I'm still playing it.
Wait, are you playing it right now?
No, I mean, before we started recording.
Oh, okay.
But my game save started at a total of, 5 hours? Within the last 6 months I played it. And when I saved before we started recording, it was at 11 hours and 28 minutes.
Goddamn. I've never played a Persona game.
I was thinking about it when I was browsing the PS3 store.
They're good, but they're...
I wanted to find a really good JRPG. I was in the mood.
Yeah, they are cool, and they look great, but yeah, they're super, super Japanese. Like, the way you could have more personas available is the more friendships you have in during the day, which is high school. So you have to hang out with people and go to the arcade.
Oh, God, no.
Roberto, that's kind of creepy, you know? It's like, I'm picturing you. I got to make friends at high school. Hold on.
No, yeah, but, I mean, I have it, and, you know, I feel bad, you know, just leaving it there to, like, collect dust. I'm like, you know, I have it. I'm trying to go through my entire backlog, but shit.
How many Resident Evils would that be? How many Resident Evils would I have to go through your entire backlog?
Oh no, that's done, dude. That's those are played and replayed. And actually, funny story. You know, this is before achievements and trophies and all this shit. Back in the day, we would I had two friends and we would play, you know, every day. So we would do challenges like, all right, make it to the final boss, but you can't heal, or you could only use a handgun, or you know, so on and so forth. And actually managed to kill the last boss with the knife. That was awesome.
What have you been working on, Roberto?
Basically, well, I think from my side, for the first map, all the assets are done. It's really just us fine-tuning performance.
Yeah, that's been an issue. You know, it's doing some things with the building a environment for an exterior is much more complicated than an interior. Especially if you want it, especially when it's as big as some of the levels we've been trying to make for our Horror Legends. At least for Puppet Master, which is like, you know, hallways mostly, so you know, it's, you know, you don't have to worry about what you can see a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kind of tackle some of those things in Unity can be kind of irritating.
I look back at my portfolio of work and everything is indoors. So, you know, this environment is open, outdoors, it's totally refreshing to work on something like this, but I mean, we've been playtesting it. And it's there, it's fun. It just needs that, you know, code polish to, you know,
code
get everything really.
It needs a code engine, really. I mean, it just, right now we're basically running this thing on templates to kind of get the, you know, get a prototype going. But, like, we need a dedicated programmer to build things from the ground up for us. We can really get this game to where we want it. Hopefully soon we'll be able to, you know, raise enough money to actually make that happen, hire someone full time. We actually got the opportunity to talk to someone at a horror convention that he got really excited about what we're trying to do, and he's given us a free table at next year's Crypticon in Seattle, which should be pretty good for publicity, at least, you know, just be able to like talk to people and pitch the idea to people and just to get the word out there. Even if we don't make much money, just the exposure, and maybe someone could help us out. But, you know, I think that's the one thing. If we can get our name out there and you know, maybe someone will help us out, or, you know, having some kind of financial backing will be much easier once we approach, like, Kickstarter or Indiegogo, if we have, like, a following. But first, we gotta make sure the con is a success. But we got a lot of interesting things for the con too. Like right now, I've been kind of doing game design on the side, and mostly focusing on promotional stuff for the game. So right now, we're actually making a comic book to kind of set up the game scenario, the initial Pumpkinhead, Mr. Pumpkey level. We're making a prequel origin story to that character in a comic book form, and we're going to sell that at the con. And then we're doing, like, posters and buttons and T-shirts and stickers and stuff to help raise money for it. So if you guys are... If anyone listening to this is, you know, interested, you know, please come visit us at the con next year. It's Seattle Crypticon. I think it's at the end of May. We'll be there. We'll have a booth there. We're actually going to try to create a haunted house scenario, but it's going to be encompassing of what the game is going to be like. So what we're going to do, you know, Dan here, who's actually had some experience at the Great Horror Campout, has a chupacabra monster in a maze. We're going to actually utilize some of that stuff, that some of his experience, to create something like that for our game, and kind of get people psyched for it by creating a haunted house type maze scenario with a pumpkin roaming it, which is quite an undertaking.
Yeah.
I'm pretty...
It's, yeah, we haven't gotten a good grasp on how we're going to make that maze yet.
Soon, I'll be able to check
on... We got some ideas, but we haven't nailed anything down.
Well, I should be able to check out the room we're getting next month. So, like, mid-December, or at least before Christmas, I'll be able to go check out the space, see how much room we have, and then I can start planning cost and design, how exactly this thing's going to work out. I mean, we have a rough idea, but just don't know the materials. Dan here is going to be playing the pumpkin character in the scenario, which is, my God, that's going to be tiring.
I'm good at making all weird noises at them.
Yeah, I think one of the cool things about this idea is that it's, like, not just a haunted house where you can just walk through it, and it's like, oh, it's kind of creepy, and then you're done. It's like a game. We're going to try to make, like, a game out of it, where people walk in, and they have to kind of complete a small objective and not be caught by the Pumpkinhead, by Mr. Pumpkey. So it's kind of like you have to be stealthy and observant of your surroundings while trying to navigate this dark maze, while you have this crazy Pumpkinhead guy trying to get you and kick you out of the maze.
You gotta be like Solid Snake, or else I'm gonna get you.
No, I just had an idea. What's anybody who visits us and goes into the maze, we should actually, for example, right now, Nick Scap has a vest on. We should make a vest and
Jesus
have some
Christ.
Wear in it. That would be Nick's cap.
Make a vest?
Yeah.
No way, man. I gotta make posters.
What? Making Nick's cap wears like a punk rock vest. That's not hard to make at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we could do that. And I think one of them has a backpack, right? Like, you know, basically putting something from the character on you know, one of the... on every person participating, so that way, you know, we could call it out. Oh, Nick Scab has been caught, you're out. Or Stevie Lynn won, everybody else is dead.
I mean, maybe, I don't know.
we'll see. Oh, that's what you're talking about. I don't know about that.
That's a lot of work. I mean, I gotta make this comic book, for one. So that's, I'm halfway done writing the script. I've made the cover page, and I have the basic story in my head all planned out, but making that vest, and that's going to get expensive. This whole thing's going to be expensive to pull off, even with the free.
But making a vest couldn't be that expensive.
Making one vest.
You go to Goodwill. You get a jacket. You chop it up, and then you put some patches on it.
Yeah, that's one. Okay, now make about like three.
No, we only
30
need
more.
One.
I don't know.
Yeah, just one. There's only one next cap.
Yeah, it's just something that they wear when they go while they're in the maze, and they take it off when they get out.
Okay.
Yeah, that way we can know, you know, who's who. And
I mean, that's Roberto's idea.
It'll be like,
I think,
hey, Nick Scab survived, or
nah. I mean, you want to keep people to make them feel like themselves, you know.
Yeah.
You're going into that scenario, not Nick Scab. You know,
That is true.
Yeah, we could have Nick Scab be the camp counselor type character.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We still got to plan this thing out. I mean, we have a rough design in our heads. It could change throughout the months until, you know, whenever.
Oh, we should totally make Nick Scab the camp counselor.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's not really a camp, so we wouldn't have a camp counselor. So maybe.
Well, he's not.
No. You're right. I'm agreeing with you.
That role.
No, I'm agreeing with you. Yeah, he's not. There's not the character's not a counselor, so it'd be make sense if it was a character from the game. So I mean, I think Matt can pull off Nick Scab, right?
Oh yeah, he could.
We could get Matt on this podcast sometime. He'd be good. Oh man, yeah. I'm excited. This is gonna be a lot of fun. It'd be cool to like actually talk about this game with people and get people excited. It's a great idea. You gotta get it out there before it's too late. I feel like lately the idea of asymmetrical horror games, competitive horror games, are becoming a thing now.
Yeah. Plus one thing about Horror Legends that what we're trying to aim for is that every new legend, every new monster will have a different flavor of competitive multiplayer. For example, the Punky's Revenge. It's, fast-paced, in your face, grab your guns, and let's survive. Whereas the next one we're thinking about will be scaled back in terms of action, and it will be more survival. There's barely anything to defend yourself with because of the legend that we are considering. So,
you want to talk about that legend?
It's
up to you. You call it.
Right? No, it's no. Yeah. See, the cool thing is, like, anyone can make a legend here. I'm up for any idea. I mean, I was just talking to my brother on the phone today, and I told him about this idea, and he was just like, "Oh, that's so friggin' cool! Like, what do you think about insects, Drake?" I'm like, "That sounds cool. Yeah, tell me about insects." It's like, "Bugs. Okay, have you seen Mimic?" I'm like, "Yeah, I've seen Mimic. So what if you had an insect that could like morph into a human and like hide amongst them and stuff, and like." That could be an idea. It's like, yeah, and it could be like, he could like, I don't know, put parasites in people and like watch where they are through the walls and like track them down and, you know, and like, yeah, I think the fun idea here is that you can have, it doesn't really have to stick to a theme. I think, and it's better if multiple people come up with the legends. Like, I don't care who comes up with it. And if it's good, we'll put it in the game. And it doesn't have to be like, well, if it was evolved, like, you can't have a slasher in a vault because they're fighting giant monsters in that game, you know. So, but we can have a giant monster in our game and it would work, because who gives a fuck?
That would be the in space legend.
In space legend, or I mean, I made this design for like a giant fish monster that can like get on land and shit that I want to do. It's got like this giant mouth, and like the idea was like when it's in the hallways. It's like mouth takes up the entire hallway and like kind of like waddles after you. It's kind of slow, but you can't get around it. So that could be kind of weird. And just like I want to be like free flowing with the ideas. So I don't want to be the only one to come up with this. Is what I'm trying to say. So please, if you have an idea for a monster, please let me know. I'll definitely consider it. Classic to traditional to weird and stupid. Well, Dan wants to put a freaking like boxing lobster in there.
That's supposed to be a secret character, right?
Well, I know. Yeah.
It's not a boxing lobster. It's a rainbow mantis. Get it right. Because a boxing lobster isn't real. A rainbow mantis is.
It's not real yet.
We'll make it real.
Yeah. But anybody interested in the status of the game and where is it going, I mean, definitely drop by the con, hang out, you know, like Drake said, there's going to be a lot of stuff there, the maze, comic, and, you know, what anything else that we can manage to, you know, get out in time to definitely show everybody.
Some new videos. We're going to make a new video promoting the game with new characters and new maps showcasing. And showcased in the video, so if you want to see it first, you can go to the con and meet us, and we'll be glad to talk to you about it. Maybe get some more behind the scenes stuff on that. Maybe see some like turntables and all sorts of cool things. We're up for anything, really. But
you could buy me a drink too.
You'll need a drink after running around in that costume.
If enough people buy me a drink, the maze will get even more incredible.
You're just stumbling around in there, aren't you?
Stumbling around.
So how was, like, how is it to be a monster? Like, what is it like? Like, is it fun?
It's fun.
Is the fun outweigh the physical nature of it? Like, is it worth it?
Dude, in my day job, I'm a cook. It's not physically difficult relative to that. Yeah, I mean, I can imagine if you're used to, like, sitting in a cubicle all day, it might be a little taxing to be up on your feet all day, but I'm used to it.
When you're not up on your feet, you're in a costume running or chasing people in the dark.
Tomato.
In high school, when I was in Mexico, so in Mexico, November 2nd is Day of the Dead. So a few weeks before, we would have our school would do this fair, this town fair. So down there in high school, so grammar school is first grade through sixth grade, and then high school is, you know, 1, 2, 3, which would be 7, 8, and ninth grade, I guess. But the third grade, ninth grade, and down there is high school. They were in charge of the haunted house, so you know you would charge for admission and whatnot. But this was I want to say 98, 99, and actually since then. A bunch of my cousins went to the same school, and people I know that were younger than me went to the same school. And since then, nobody has beat our haunted house in money or in size and in fun. And actually, for that haunted house, you know, Scream was out, so of course I went and bought a Ghostface costume. And it's funny, I ended up, you know, I couldn't speak afterwards because I was trying to scream. And this girl actually... I freaked out pretty bad that she, like, poked my eye and ripped my mask in half. So it was pretty fun.
We should put you in the maze, Roberto.
Oh, man, dude. I probably will after a few beers.
You know what? Great. What do you guys think of every day? Or maybe, like, every once in a while, we switch up what monsters in the maze. We get a couple different costumes, and we throw it in the maze. And that way, people go in there, they get the experience of what the game might be like, you know? Where they're not exactly sure what they're going to find in there.
That would be cool. Yeah. Definitely, yeah.
I mean, we could do... I don't know. I mean, sure, we could get all sorts of costumes. Yeah?
The thing is, the problem of getting the costume together, it will make it hard to do that, because then we'd have to get more costumes together.
Well, I mean, one costume would be easier to put together than the next. Like, one could be a slasher type. Which could be like a mask and like a jumpsuit or something. Something really simple. You don't have to go overboard like we did with Pumpkin. But,
But definitely Pumpkin would be the flagship.
We should do the human version of Pumpkin.
I feel like we should put as much effort into every monster as we... equal effort into every monster.
Oh, I agree with you, but, like, so not every monster
have, like,
is going to need that much...
So you go through one day... So you have people that go through one day, and they get the experience with a really quality Pumpkin, and then another day, they get an experience of a guy in a jumpsuit with a mask.
Well, if it... I think if the monster's cool and going to be in the game. I mean, some monsters are easier to make than others. And Pumpkin is a lot harder to make because he's got the, you know, he's made of wood and he's got a pumpkin head and, you know, he's more monstrous. But then, maybe we can do the human version of Pumpkin that's going to be featured in the comic book. You know, that he's more simple. I don't know, we can kind of go back and forth. I mean, you're going to need a break every once in a while, right? You know, depends.
How many hours is the con open for every day?
Well,
like
it's
8, 12?
I think Friday it starts at like afternoon. I think maybe 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saturday all day. I think it goes to like 3 to 9. I'm not sure what our restrictions are yet. I will probably find out soon. But we can probably let's go with the dealer's room rules. Like, I think it'll probably be like 3 to 9. And then Saturday will be like 9 to 3 or 4 or whatever, and then Sunday it's like 9 to noon. So we'll have probably those hours to work with. I'm not sure if it'll be.
Dude, that's like no time at all.
Well, I mean, if you're
it's less than an 8-hour day, most days.
But we might be, I mean, of course, I think we'll be able to go beyond 3 o'clock or right. 4 o'clock.
Hopefully.
I mean, I think it'll be okay. I mean,
well, definitely Saturday would be the big day.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, if you're in a costume, I don't know, it's up to you, Dan. I mean, you did the Great Horror Camp Out, you know how exhausting it is. Like, was it, how long were those shifts?
I don't remember.
It's all a blur now, right?
Well, we were out there. We didn't have phones or anything on us.
That's true.
We were just there until we were told that we were done.
All right, I need a refill. Be back in a few seconds.
Okay. Sounds like he just threw his mic down.
He threw it on the ground.
Yeah. Doing something like that, I mean, we want to encourage, like, replay. We want people to come back and try it again. I mean, it's a game. It's a game, not just an experience. Like, you might not make it the first time. And then the next time, you'll go, okay, I'm ready for Pumpkin this time. Then you go in there and something else, maybe the different set of rules or something. Who knows? We can mess around with the idea. Once I know the specs of the room, we can plan this better. But I think I should be able to figure this out within a month or so, depending on when we were able to go check the room out. Once I see the room, I'll be able to make like a proxy of the environment and do like a 3D spec of it, plan the materials we'll need and stuff. I'm going to heavily rely on lighting to get this, pull this thing off, because I don't think I have the money to make a full-fledged, like, badass haunted house. So,
right.
I wouldn't expect, like, really cool props, but expect a cool experience. Like, this thing's a game like any other video game would be, but it's done with actors and stuff, so...
Except it's real life.
Except it's real life, man. No, it's gonna be awesome. I can't wait for it. It gives people a taste of what the game might be like, and like what we're aiming for the game. Like, go in there, and you're in the horror movie. You're not just, it's not like a shooter. It's not just like you go in there and kill the zombies, or you're in there and you have to figure out how to survive, what you're facing, what tools you'll need, and what would you do in a horror movie? Would you go downstairs? It's kind of like the same idea. Would you go, like, maybe we can have like paths that lead to, dead ends, and it's like you messed up, and then like it's an easy way for you to get in there and like pick them off.
Well, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, like
you're starting to sound like we're gonna have like levers and puzzles and
no, it's like whether they get out or not, it's gonna be based on their decision. It's not gonna be a passive experience whatsoever.
Yeah, they definitely have to think and succeed.
You know, there's always people when they're watching a horror movie, they go like, "Why'd you go over there? Why'd you do that?"
Yeah.
I would have done this. I'm so smart. And it's like, well, okay, we'll see. We'll see if you can.
Drake, you are one of those people sometimes.
I know, I am. But I think about this stuff a lot.
Everybody splits up instead of sticking together.
What were we watching? What was the last thing we were watching that was? What was I complaining about?
That was Behind the Mask. I think that either that one.
Behind the Mask. I haven't seen that. Is it good?
That's an awesome movie. I like that movie. No. It was Who's Next? We're watching Who's Next.
Yeah.
But
that movie redeemed it.
That movie redeemed itself because all the things I was saying, like why, like these are all bad ideas. Why would you do that? And then I can't spoil the movie, but because it's a really cool movie. You should check out. If you haven't seen Who's Next, it's on Netflix. Go watch it. It caught me by surprise. Like, I thought it was just some generic home invasion film, but it has some cool moments to it, especially one with a blender. That I liked a lot.
Oh yeah, that movie was awesome. It was really fun.
Wasn't
shit. Yeah, you really can't talk about it without spoiling anything.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple cool moments in there you shouldn't spoil. I mean, basically, what happened was I was complaining a lot in the beginning, and the movie hit a twist, and then I was like, oh okay, and now everything I was complaining about made sense, and I could go with it.
No, but it's definitely a perfect example of how people are, for lack of a better word, stupid when they start panicking.
Yeah, well, there's one character that was the exact opposite of that, which made the movie great. And no, I can't say much more, or I'll spoil it, because I'm actually 2 Roman Cokes and a beer in now, and I might spoil the movie if I keep talking. But have you seen anything Roberto lately? Like,
yeah, actually, I've been going through Netflix, and actually before Halloween, I googled, you know, best scary movies on Netflix 2014. So I've been going through a few of those, and one of those was Grave Encounters. Have you guys seen it?
Never heard of
it.
Oh,
I've seen that.
I really liked the first one, and it felt fresh. And
cool.
I jumped into the second one like minutes after I finished the first one, and the second one sucked. It I know people don't set out to make a turd, and you saw a turd. No, but instead of being angry at the people who wrote it, came up with the idea, whatever, the people I'm angry at is the people who signed the checks, because that was a dumb idea. That was a really, really dumb idea.
Yeah, but those people probably got bigger checks back.
Yeah.
That's how that works. A lot of bad horror movies are made because they're made for cheap, and they always make their money back, because horror is just kind of that one genre that people are intrigued by it, and they're willing to take risks on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very lenient on horror. I get really tired of the found footage movies.
Well, it's really hard to really scare people.
Yeah, it after more time goes on, it's like harder and harder to scare people.
I think every time a movie comes out that scares people, afterwards, it'll be like 5 years till another movie comes out that scares people.
Yeah, the problem is like it takes
each time it like changes the game.
Yeah, the thing is like in order to scare people, you have to do something different. I think that's one thing. Like, there's jump scares, which are just inherently, you will jump no matter what. Like, it's like a psychological thing that they can rely on that's gonna work. But really, when the movie's over, you don't even remember it. Once it's over, it doesn't mean anything. But like a horror movie that does something really well, it's gonna stick with you for days. You're gonna be dwelling on it. You're like, that's fucked up. Why did that happen? And I don't think a lot of horror movies do that.
I think a horror movie that does what it sets out to do well has you like looking over your shoulder at
night.
Yeah,
yeah. It's just so rare nowadays. A lot of the horror movies that come out are found footage, so I tend to glaze over a lot because like, oh, that looks like crap. Oh, that looks like crap. Because I've become kind of jaded to it. But I know there's like some good found footage out there, but it's like I get tired of it. There's a couple good movies that are coming out soon, or have been kind of going through the circuit that I've heard about that I really want to see, but I'm not exactly sure when they'll be out. I think one's Babadook. Have any of you guys heard that? Heard about
no,
that movie?
Not me.
Babadook? Oh my god. Apparently it's like a psychological thriller between like a mother and her son. And they get like this book on their doorstep, and she opens it up, and it's like this weird fairy tale about this monster called the Babadook. And after she reads this book to her kid, who she despises, by the way, like this is all something I got from like the trailer. You should look up the trailer if you haven't had a chance yet. But some parents you think go through like this phase with their kids where they just get sick of them because some kids are just kind of unwieldy and hard to deal with. And I think this movie kind of deals with that, where you have a mother who can't stand her kid, and then she reads this book to her, and then reads this book to her kid, and then this monster starts haunting them, trying to steal her kid from her, and it kind of messes with her head, and people think she's crazy or trying to get rid of her kid, and I don't know, like I really want to see this film, like I've heard so much about it, and it's not in theaters, it might be in select theaters. But once it comes out in VOD, I'm watching the shit out of this. The trailer is really weird and freaky. But it basically, a storybook, like a kid's book, kind of comes to life and torments this mother and daughter, mother and her son.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
One movie that scared the crap out of me, and I'm not even sure if you could consider this horror, was, hold on, what's it called? The Fourth Kind.
Oh, what?
That, I don't know, man. That found something footage, about aliens.
The found footage aliens film? Get out of here.
No, the scenes where they would, where like somebody like levitates from the bed and then bends backwards.
Is that, that's found footage, right?
No, well, yes and no. Like when the scares happen, they splice apparently real footage. Like, so you're looking at the screen, and on the left you see like the official, like, well, I mean, I say official, quote, who knows if it is, the official, you know, police camera video, and then on the right you have the movie. But it's, I guess it's more, it's creepy to me, but not in a I'm gonna get killed kind of way. It's creepy in a, like, ugh, like, I want to say disturbing kind of way, because when I finished watching that, I turned the light off, and I could just imagine a gray, naked dude standing, like, looking at me in the corner, like, ugh.
Dude, the thing that bothered, I tried watching that movie on, that was on Netflix, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I tried watching it on Netflix, and I couldn't get through it, because the movie tries to make you think that it actually happened. And it's just like, you just get this feeling. I got this feeling like it's just a load of crap, and they're trying to make me swallow this large pill, and it's just, no thanks. It's kind of, I don't know. I didn't really go for it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know. The thing about found footage films, I think, what they need to start doing is pulling away from trying to rely on. The cool thing about found footage films is those moments where you're like, you see that thing in the background and whatnot, and it makes you feel like you found it, you were going through your tapes and you saw it yourself. But the thing is, in order to get to those points, you gotta go through this like 40 minutes of like bullshit or just nonsense. You know, they don't put any effort into character development, but there's like so much time devoted to it. I don't know, like, I was watching that, it was just like, it just felt lame. I don't know, like, I didn't really go for the Fourth Kind.
Yeah, one that didn't really do it for me was The Bay, and a lot of people were recommending it. I mean, it is a cool idea, but, I mean, the whole mass panic thing, I mean, since The Mist, well, I mean, to me, I love The Mist, and I think that's the highest point of that, like, mass hysteria terror kind of flick. But, I mean, I love the idea, though. It was pretty fresh and neat. Same idea. I mean, same deal with the VHS movies. You know, it's stupid fun. You know, you're gonna see something that you've seen before, but it's in a different way, yet in a familiar medium. That, you know, it's fun. It's like, I remember when I was working at GameStop, one guy would say, "Oh yeah, that's a Saturday night Cheetos fest."
What?
You know,
what is Saturday
Cheetos fest? And just, you know, watching like old VHSs.
Oh, okay.
Dude, I bought a VHS from a from a Goodwill that said Prime Colors on it.
Yeah.
It said it in like white pencil on the front of this black VHS, and I'm afraid to watch it. I'm afraid I'm gonna find something like disturbing on it. It's creepy. I should watch it. Maybe after this beer, I'll be dumb enough to watch that movie. And then you guys don't hear from me. You can probably know that something in that tape pulled me into the TV.
But, oh, it's the Ring tape.
Yeah.
You know what happened at the end of The Ring, right?
Everyone dies?
No.
I didn't see the Ring.
They figure out how to save themselves from the Ring.
From the is it the American version or both versions? Both are like that?
Yeah.
Or I'm thinking of Ju-On, where it's kind of like no one wins at the end of Ju-On, right?
No, nobody wins in Ju-On.
Like, you can't escape that shit. I always get those two mixed up. Ju-On and The Ring.
Stop. that's like my favorite. That's my favorite genre.
I know.
Or so.
It's the ultimate psychological horror, I think. The Ring and Ju-On.
It's almost like it's definitely, I don't know if it's psychological, it's more like, yeah, it's more, oh, it's not psychological, it's
psychological
just, you know, like supernatural.
Yeah.
supernatural horror. Yeah. It's not psychological, but there is some pretty, like, the twist in Ju-On was pretty awesome. I mean, the twist in The Grudge was really poor. The Grudge was the worst of the American adaptations of those movies.
Yeah, it's funny, I mean, out there in Japan, they're really good at that, you know, supernatural the horror, and here, I don't think I've seen any, you know, supernatural horror movie, you know, American-made or American-produced that was like, wow.
I think it's because a lot of the American audiences, they don't have, like, the patience for that kind of movie. They don't have, like, the patience or the ability to open themselves up to, like, the possibility of it. Like, they won't give it enough credence. American audiences are very cynical. If there's not boobs and blood in it, it's like, why am I watching this?
I think this, I kind of got, like, reading some, like, people's comments on the trailer of Babadook, I heard that, like, you don't see a lot of the creature in that movie. It's all, like, in the head of the characters, and it's subtle. And, like, one guy I saw him post, like, oh, there was no monster, so this movie sucks. And it's just like, yeah. No, it's, like...
Those people, though, aren't really, like, watching horror movies for horror. They're watching it for... They view it as more like a very violent action flick, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, those are the guys that they'll line up for Transformers 7.
It's like, oh, dude, I heard they have trucks that turn into robots.
That's funny, I actually saw the latest Transformers. I mean, I'm only mentioning this because, you know, Chicago was in it. Otherwise, I wouldn't give a shit. But it's funny, they try to pass off downtown Chicago as downtown China. And they would just slap Chinese symbols all over the buildings. It was hilarious. Like,
yeah, that's
the closest freeway to where I live. There's like this old abandoned factory there. It looks great. I mean, it looks like something out of I want to say Resident Evil 4. And of course, you know, there's this huge shot of Optimus Prime backflipping, punching another robot in the face, and they just slap, you know, Chinese characters on top of that building.
It's like, you know, Americans haven't been to China. They think the Chinese are communists. They think Chinese are communists. They don't know what China actually looks like. Let's just slap Chinese symbols on an American city. It'll be fine. They don't even know what Chicago looks like.
Oh, boy.
Americans think every city looks like American cities.
So you guys been watching anything else? Horror related that has piqued your interest?
Not horror related.
Or anything in general that, you know, has, you know.
I've been catching up on The Arrow.
I haven't seen that.
The TV show?
Yeah.
About the Green Arrow?
Yeah, no, I had to watch Smallville because of my wife, because we have this whole rivalry where I say Batman is the best and she says Superman is the best. So I lost this one bet, so I had to watch the entire series of Smallville. And he's in there.
God damn.
Who? And the character of Green Arrow, he is in there.
Oh, really?
And he's a pretty important character. Like, I think from season 3 onward, he's in it till the end. And
is it the same actor?
No, they completely changed him. Okay. Like, this guy, he has blonde hair and, you know, clean cut, no beard, whatever. I actually like the way he looks in the current show compared to the other one, because the first time he came out, I told my wife, I'm like, oh, he should have like a, you know, like a Robin Hood mustache.
Facial hair?
Yeah. He should look like he should look like Robin Hood, but, I mean, it was this clean dude, and, of course, you know, he doesn't have a shirt on for whatever reason, but...
Have you guys been playing anything? You were playing Persona 4, right?
3. I was actually going to start 4, but I heard that, because I want to play through all of them. The reason I like it was because back in the day, I played the second one. And the second one was pretty cool. I think Dan would like this. If you haven't played any, right, Dan?
No, played any Persona?
Yeah.
No.
So in the second one, you're this reporter, and apparently somebody is killing people with text messages. And you actually meet this person, and this person is called Joker. And he's wearing a a brown paper bag on his face, and he has like a clown face painted on it. So, you know, it was pretty creepy in that way.
Yeah.
But I mean, I never got.
Sounds pretty cool.
I never, you know, got really far in it. I played.
I would ask, like, how does he kill people with text messages? But that's probably the whole point of playing the game.
Yeah, and I probably played like an hour and a half of it. A friend let me borrow it, but he had borrowed it from another friend, so he's like, hey, dude, I need the game back. All right, cool. So, you know, it's been years.
I heard Drake laugh a little bit when he said kill him with text messages. Drake thinks if it's not a scyther, like a dagger, it can't kill people.
Right, not
what, the text message? Are you serious?
If it's not directly a weapon, it's not a viable horror weapon.
He just spams you suck to, like, a person with no self-esteem, and then you just go jump off a building. Is that how it happens? Like, how does it work? How do you kill someone with a text message?
This is Japanese horror, right?
Is that horror? And, is Persona horror?
No, well, I mean, that...
Japanese storytelling.
Why is that an excuse? Oh, it's Japanese, don't worry about it.
they like to do strange things. That's all. Unconventional things, and then they do something unconventional, and then they explain it later. That's pretty much how all Japanese stuff works. If you look at any storyline in any like game or Japanese series, they say, you know what would be really cool if we did this? It's like, but how does that work? We'll explain it later.
Yeah,
like, as long as they know what they're
like,
doing.
You look at things like Naruto is pretty much, it's like, what can we do that's really cool? And then the rest of the series is used to explain why it happens.
No, but yeah, I've been playing that. I have 3 and 4. Well, I actually have 1, 2, and 3. Well, wait, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Let's just say, you know, I have the student versions. Drake knows what I'm talking about. I'm sure everybody knows what I'm talking about.
I guess.
Fuck it, I'll just say it. I have I have backups of the games, which I prefer to play because I don't want to fuck up my disc. Anyway, so...
Okay.
I heard, you know, 4 is 2, you know, 4, I mean, again, on PS2, 4 is better, but if you play 4 and then you try to play 3, you will not be able to get through 3, so I'm doing 3 first. But, yeah, I'm actually kind of jonesing. I haven't played Outbreak in forever. But, yeah, that's definitely...
The play Outbreak now is so much work, though. Like, I gotta, like, go reassign, like, re-establish my account and, like, download some files and then, like, do a weird dance and, you know, pray to the gods of Capcom.
Do your social security number?
That's it. I totally understand, Roberto. I'm like that every time I try to play Skyrim. I will, like, install a bunch of mods and, like, okay, I think this is working. Then it slowly starts to work worse and worse and worse until it's completely unwieldy. I'm like, fuck it, I'll uninstall it. Then later I'll be, man, I want to play some modded Skyrim, see what's up with it. And then it'll take, like, 8 hours to install all the stuff that that you should have on it.
Yeah, no, actually, I'm kind of stuck in this, like, weird downloading loop hell with Left 4 Dead 2. I had installed it onto an external drive. So I uninstalled it, and I tried re-downloading it to download it locally, but it keeps downloading into the same directory. So who knows how I'm going to get that fixed.
I played these mods for Left 4 Dead that were really cool. They were like survival horror mods, kind of. They make it so it's like the zombies can only be killed with headshots. There's less of them. You have less ammo, and you don't have any allies. It's just you alone.
Nice. That sounds pretty crazy.
Yeah, it can be pretty crazy, especially when you get to like the horde events where a bunch of them start rushing you. It gets kind of insane. It's very difficult.
Now, yeah, like Drake says, a bummer about Outbreak. I hadn't logged in months. So the other day I said, fuck it, I'm going to do it. I'm going to log in. And I went to the website, and apparently some people were getting banned because they were trying to, like, somehow attack the server, like trying to break it somehow. And so they started preventing people from making accounts, but the only way to log in to the actual game is with your Forum account. So And any accounts that were, you know, inactive, no posts, whatever, you know, they just deleted all of them. But, I mean, it's, for me, it's stupid, great fun. But, I mean, again, I'm probably biased because I worship Resident Evil. But, I mean, if, for example, if we played, I know we will have a great time. Even though I've played it a million times, I know it's going to be great because, you know, you guys appreciate horror and the tension and the multiplayer aspect of it. But there's a lot of people in there that, you know, the game loads up, you start off in the same room, four people, and dude just runs off. Instead of, like, I mean, you can't...
Yeah, that's the thing I want to prevent in Horror Legends. Like, if you don't know what fucking monster someone picked, then you can't just run off and go start completing the objectives. Like, you have to
wait.
Well,
you can, but...
You can't, because you don't know what objectives there are to complete yet. You have to figure out what monster you're facing...
People are gonna do it.
Yeah, of course. And they will die. Them. And they will get killed by the monster because the monster will have an advantage. That's the kind of thing I want to avoid. Like, you play this map once, you can't play it again the exact same way. At least it's very rare to do it. That's the kind of thing. That's the kind of gameplay I like, where you take a situation, you have to take it slow and just figure out okay what's going on and work together as a team. Where some people are just like, oh, I played this game 100 million times. Let me just go in there and do the things and run away, and I know exactly what to do with this situation. It gets kind of irritating. Where the game loses its power.
The thing is like one thing we gotta keep in mind is like the more strategic a game is, the more important it is that there is in-game mics.
Yeah.
Of some sort.
That's definitely something I want to do. It's just. You need a programmer. If you're a programmer, please contact us.
Yeah, one thing I've been telling Drake about that would be cool is if you have a headset, let's say you and Drake were hiding and I was the legend. And so I walk past you guys. Obviously, I can't see you because you guys are hidden. But if Drake speaks to you, I would hear him loud and clear. So I know he's right there. Unless, you know, if maybe you guys whispered, I couldn't hear. But I don't know, that seems like a cool idea, but, you know, who knows?
Oh, that, like, having it so that if you whisper, it's quieter. The proximity range is less. That, I'd imagine, would be a nightmare to go with.
No, I mean, Unity kind of supports that already. I mean, it's got, like...
Variable proximity chat?
It's got that variable proximity sound, and we could just apply that to the chat.
But it would have to, have like an algorithm to, like, figure out how many
decibels you're
reporting at.
If you're further away from a certain point, because it's a gradient, like, wherever the sound's emitting from, it's quieter further away. You can set that up, and you can use that with voice chat.
Right, but what Roberto's talking about is that if you talk loudly, you can hear it from farther away than if you talk quietly.
If you think of it this way, Dan, you have someone whispering into a microphone, and that whisper, you know, degrades over the distance. You know, it's going to be hard to hear it. If I screamed over the microphone, that exact same sound's going to gradient. It's going to the volume's going to decrease over a certain distance, but it sounds louder. So it's going to be. It's going to take more. It's going to take a greater distance for that sound to degrade. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean you'd have to be like. At least in the same room as the other people.
Yeah, right.
The reasoning behind that is, you know, to get that horror movie tension where in a movie like Friday the 13th, Jason walks into the barn and two people are hiding and they're like, "Don't both be quiet because he's gonna kill us." And then boom, he hears them and he kills somebody.
Yeah, no, I think we can do that. We can even make it so the mouths move with the audio.
Oh, that'd be awesome, yeah.
That'd be cool. I've been playing the Zombie U, which has been really cool. Have you ever played that?
Oh, yeah, you just picked up a Wii, right?
Yeah, I picked up a Wii, within the last week. And I picked up Zombie U right away, because that game's got some really cool asymmetrical combat. It's very reminiscent of Zombie Master. Have you played that, Roberto? I know Dan has.
No, I know it's a Half-Life 2 mod, right? I think.
It's a Half-Life 2 mod that basically, it's one guy controls a bunch of a horde of zombies... while a group of people try to complete objectives. It's a great game. I don't know if many people play it anymore, but I love that. I love the hell out of that game. But Zombie U does a great job of making that work with only two people. and with the Wii U gamepad and the one guy using the basic first-person shooter controls, it's a solid game. I mean, I like games that don't make you rely on, like, eight people. Like, I like multiplayer that's like you can play with you and a friend, or like just like a handful of people. I don't like it when you have to, like, you need 16 people to play this to have fun. Like, it's very rare if the game, you know, it's very hard to get a good game going with those types of restrictions. And then there's always some guy that's really good at the game, and like you jump in for a little bit to play casually, and then you get your butt kicked. But I think there needs to be more like two player games, more three player games. I mean, those are a lot of those with co-op, but like competitively, I think there's, you know, not too many. And I think Zombie U is a great game that was kind of underappreciated when it came out. I mean, the Wii U
I think
kind of underappreciated, in my opinion.
I think to an extent the reason there's less games with like small that are based around small groups is that I think despite this like sort of outcry of players wanting like their actions in game to affect the in game world, I think there's like a part of people that doesn't really want that to be. They want to be able to be just sort of lost in the numbers and do their own thing, kind of thing.
Maybe.
They don't want to, like, have the pressure of being important. and also publishers, but if you're making a game, making it, like, based around 16 people owning or playing it means you have, like, four times as many people that need to buy it before it's fun. So
yeah,
it makes them money. That's just, like, my musings while you're just talking right there.
No, I get where you're coming from. It's just I could enjoy those games for a bit, but like sometimes, like when I want to play with a couple friends, I mean, it's rare that you have like, you know, eight people to play a game with. You know what I mean? Like maybe
yeah.
I'm just like, I don't know, maybe I don't have any friends. But I mean, who has eight friends that have the same game that play that game constantly? I don't know, maybe you have like friends that you met in the game, but you know, sometimes it's cool to just go, hey man, would you like to play some Zombie U? And you play Zombie U and you have a good time, and it's, you know, you go, you know, it's not, you don't have to rely on, you know, oh man, do you want to play some Battlefield 4? Sure, let's jump in Battlefield 4. And then you get your ass kicked by like three helicopters for like an hour and a half. And then you're like, okay, I've had enough of Battlefield 4. And like, hey, were you even playing? Yeah, I was in there somewhere. It's just like, I don't know. I mean, there's co-op games that support that kind of thing I'm talking about, but I don't know. I think Zombie U is kind of a rare game. I wish there were more games like it, where you have one guy controlling a horde of zombies. You know, the Wii U gamepad's really cool, where, you know, the person's able to, like, click and drag and tell zombies to go attack this, you know, player that's doing like the classic first-person control scheme, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like the Wii U doesn't. I think more developers need to go to the Wii U and try more creative things with that gamepad. I think there's something really cool there. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I think that about wraps it up for now. So, if you guys, well, thank you for checking out the October Games podcast. If you like this podcast, please feel free to look us up on Facebook, Twitter, and our IndieDB page. If you like to help us out, please vote for our game on Steam Greenlight. Look up Horror Legends Pumpkin's Revenge and vote yes. We greatly appreciate it. And this is Drake Kazmierczak. Roberto?
Yeah, this is Roberto.
I don't know.
And I'm Dan.
I'm sorry, guys. And,
no, it's good. definitely
podcast.
Drop by Crypticon if you have a chance.
Yeah, yeah.
Out. Have a few laughs, check out our new stuff, and
yep. If you're a local Seattleite, just go, please, like, look up Crypticon and buy a ticket and come visit us, and we'll be at the con, you know, giving away swag and some cool entertainment there. So, and it'd be cool just to see and say hi. So,
or you could go in the maze and meet me.
Yeah, if you want to meet Dan, you have to go to the freaking maze. he might throw you out of the maze. But if you have any questions or about the podcast or any of our projects...
No, you're never leaving the maze.
And if you have any questions about the podcast or any of our current projects, please feel free to drop us a line at info@octobergames.com. That's info@octobergames.com. And we'll be sure to answer them within our next podcast.
In case you didn't know how to spell info.
I mumble sometimes, so I want to make sure that I didn't say, you know, something else. Anyway, I guess this is the end of the podcast, and I'm going to run away screaming.
We'll see you guys soon.
All right, adios.
Bye.